Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Scott Mason. Scott is the host of the Play Like a Jet podcast. The podcast is dedicated to providing New York Jets content. We recap the Jets game against the Atlanta Falcons, the Jets offense and defense, plus we talk rookie quarterback Zach Wilson, the Jets next game in Week 7 against the New England Patriots, and so much more. Scott is coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Robinson Show.
I'm loving McDonald's new $6 LSU fan faves meal.
Does it do that every time you open the wrapper?
No, sometimes it does this. But I like this best.
Touchdown!
Get 7 days of delicious with a new $6 LSU fan faves meal. Like Wednesday's spicy crispy chicken sandwich with medium fries and a medium Sprite for just $6. It's a different deal every day of the week. Prices and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
They have got to start to come alive, and it starts on this drive.
Second and three, Wilson throwing this side of the field, and that is complete into the 40-yard line. It's Keelan Cole for a first down. That is a 23-yard pickup.
They haven't allowed them to run the ball, and these receivers just can't seem to get open.
First and 20 now, Wilson. Over the middle, he's got his man across midfield inside the 45, and Denzel Mims. In Atlanta territory now at the 43. Still with the ball. Wilson. Gonna go deep. This side of the field. It is. Incomplete, and the penalty marker is down.
Well, I'm really...
Pass interference. Defense number 24. The ball's placed out of the foul. Automatic. First down.
He just doesn't play the ball and bails out the Jets and sets him up inside the 5-yard line.
First and goal. Carter to the end zone for the touchdown. Zach Wilson throwing left, and he's got his man, Jamison Crowder, for the 2-point conversion. And just like that, the Jets are within three.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of the National Football League and CBS Sports. That was Greg Gumbel on the call, and of course that was the game in London between the New York Jets and the Atlanta Falcons from Week 5 in the NFL. That was quarterback Zach Wilson leading a successful drive, and of course running back Michael Carter getting the touchdown with wide receiver Jamison Crowder getting the 2-point conversion. So to talk more about that game and of course some other things, we want to welcome him back to the program. He is the host of the Play Like a Jet podcast. Let's welcome him back to the program, Scott Mason. Hey, Scott, welcome back.
Hey, Ed, what's going on, sir? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, man. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. So let's jump right to it. So, Scott, the Jets, unfortunately, they lose to the Atlanta Falcons 27-20. Now, besides waking up a little bit early to watch this game and, of course, enjoying a little bit of tea and crumpet and some bangers and mash, what were your takeaways from the Jets game against the Falcons?
I wish I had tea and crumpets and bangers and mash, Ed. It might have made this game a little less painful. Yeah, I mean, I think the two major stories of this game for the Jets, there was one on defense and one on offense. The story on offense was that last week we saw what Zach Wilson did. He dazzled with incredible plays, and he missed some easy throws, which you overlooked because he dazzled with those incredible plays. Well, this week he had some nice throws late in the game particularly, but he did dazzle with the incredible plays the way he did, so it was much easier to recognize that he was missing a lot of easy throws. The one that everybody keeps passing around is that screen pass that he threw off of Morgan Moses' back, and there were several of those. And it's weird because this wasn't on his BYU tape. I'm not sure what the issue is, but he seems to be having a lot of trouble with those types of throws that are generally considered routine. And when your offense isn't moving the ball with big plays and you're not able to make the easy plays, well, then you get an offense that doesn't really do much all day, which is what happened. And with the defense, to be fair, they were on the field for 30 plays in the first quarter, but part of that was their own fault because they just couldn't get a stop all day on third down, particularly on third and long. And if you go back and look, it's crazy. The Jets, for as badly as they were outplayed the entire game, were down by 3 points with just under 7 minutes to go in the game. And so all they had to do was make a stop on a third down. They had numerous opportunities to stop the Falcons, get the ball back, and give the offense a chance to tie it or even possibly win it, and they just couldn't do it. There was a key third and 13 where the Falcons picked up a first down. And look, bottom line is, when you give a quarterback like Matt Ryan, who's not what he used to be but still good enough, all day to throw the ball, he's going to find places to go. And you also knew that the two guys that the Falcons were going to focus in on were Kyle Pitts, the number 4 overall pick, the rookie tight end out of Florida, and Cordarrelle Patterson, because those were the only two guys they had that were real weapons that had any established track record. Remember, Gage was out, and so was Ridley. And so you figured the Jets would focus their strategy on those two guys. Well, there was a play in the end zone where Kyle Pitts caught it, the first touchdown of his career. John Franklin Myers was covering him. John Franklin Myers is an excellent inside pass rusher who just signed a big contract, 4 years, $55 million, $30 million guaranteed. But he should never, ever be covering Kyle Pitts. I don't care what the circumstances are, because that's never going to go well. There's just, he's not built to cover Kyle Pitts. And so the Jets gave up about 115 yards of total offense to each of those two guys, Pitts and Patterson. So when you're giving Ryan all that time to throw, you're not getting in his face. You're not making third down stops to get off the field. And you're allowing the only two real weapons they have to basically gain yards at will. Well, what do you expect is going to happen? So add that to the offense not moving the ball. And honestly, Ed, the 27-20 final score doesn't really tell the accurate picture of how the game went, because the Falcons dominated from bell to bell. And as I said, the fact that the Jets were 3 points away with just under 7 minutes to go was absolutely remarkable. Never should have been that way. They've got the bye now. They've got a lot of time to sit down and assess and evaluate what's wrong and what needs to be fixed. But obviously, heading into the bye at 1-4, a lot of things need to be done to rectify the path that the Jets are on. So we'll see what they come up with.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack in this one. And like you said, it's one thing when your offense can't move the ball down the field. But it's definitely tragic when your defensive lineman has to cover the tight end, and Kyle Pitts is an all-world tight end, and he's just getting started. So we're going to get more, you know, and we're going to get more now into the offense in this game. Now, as far as the running game is concerned, Michael Carter is the rookie running back, and he had a rushing touchdown, and also Ty Johnson had a rushing touchdown. Tevin Coleman, who's playing up against his former team, didn't really do much in this game. He only had 3 carries for 11 yards. As far as moving the ball down the field, just kind of give me your take on the running game in against the Falcons.
Well, I'm of two minds on that. The Jets obviously went down pretty quickly early, went down by a decent margin early. So you had a situation where the Jets sort of had to play catch-up, but at the same time, it was early, and the Jets needed to keep that defense off the field. I would have liked to have seen them do more with the run. Now, to be fair, Carter and Ty Johnson didn't do phenomenally when they touched the ball. Carter had a couple of nice runs, but if you look at their averages, they were significantly below 4 for Ty Johnson and just below 4 for Michael Carter. So it's not like they were lighting it up, but they only had, I think, 19 carries for the running backs. You need to have more than that, especially when your rookie quarterback is struggling. You got to pound the ball and try to establish the run. I think Michael Carter is starting to come into his own. He's making plays. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be a 25-carry-a-game guy just because of the way he's built. He's a smaller guy. Sort of reminds you of Bilal Powell that way. I believe he's something like 5'8", 200 pounds. So, again, I'm not sure that he's built to take 25 carries. But when you have a quarterback who's having issues completing the easy passes, you'd like to see them rely a little bit more on the running game. And, again, I think that this is something that they're going to have to really have meetings about and try to figure out some way to improve during the bye week, because you need a balanced attack. You need to be leaning on the running game. That's what we all thought they were going to do going into the season. It hasn't really worked out that way. Part of it is because the running game hasn't been super effective. Part of it is because I think they haven't really committed to it in a lot of these games. So I'm curious to see how they rework this, but I think going forward, Carter will probably get the majority of the touches. You'll see Ty Johnson get some. And then Tevin Coleman will get the occasional touch here and there, which is what you've seen so far.
Yeah, you touched on a good point right there. When you have a balanced attack, it makes all the difference in the world because it relieves that pressure off of your passing game, especially when you have a rookie quarterback and a Zach Wilson. And you mentioned about Bilal Powell. Man, it was only yesterday when the Jets' MO was their running game with the likes of Thomas Jones and Bilal Powell and also and things of that nature. So I want to move along now to the receiving side. Corey Davis was the leading receiver in this contest for the Jets, 4 catches, 45 yards. Of course, Corey was the addition coming over from Tennessee, and then Keelan Cole, who was coming in from Jacksonville, he had 2 catches for 38 yards. Denzel Mims, 2 catches for 33 yards, and then Jamison Crowder, 4 catches for 24 yards. Just give me your thoughts on how the receivers did in this game.
I thought Crowder was his usual self. He got open a lot, especially on third downs, and there's at least one play where Wilson had a pass to Crowder where there was so much space, he probably would have had a touchdown, and Wilson just straight up missed him. So that one was on Wilson. And Crowder, I've said, is the only offensive player the Jets have had the last 3 years who's been consistently good. So I was happy to see him back last week. He made a big difference. This week, unfortunately, with the way that Wilson was playing, it didn't do a ton, but he was doing his job. Corey Davis is frustrating because, you know, you can see the talent. You see him make some great plays, but then you just see him drop what any receiver making the kind of money that he makes should be catching. There are various examples. There's the one against the Patriots. The ball went through his hands and became an interception. There was one a couple of weeks ago where Zach Wilson fired it downfield. I think it was against the Broncos, and it was inside the 10-yard line right in Corey Davis's chest. He couldn't come down with it. Last week, there was a ball that he couldn't catch. It was a ball that went right off of his hands. He fell down on a route as well last week. So there's just been so much frustration with Corey Davis because you can see the talent and you know what he's capable of. But just it's sort of like I said with Wilson, the easy stuff, right? You got to do the flashy things. That's what makes you great. But it all begins with the simple stuff. And sometimes Corey Davis, I don't know what it is, but the ball just bounces off his hands or his chest. That's got to get fixed. Keelan Cole, last week he played a really nice game. He's been a decent addition. He is sort of what you thought he would be, a nice fourth or fifth target. The big debate going on right now, I shouldn't even say debate, it's just more of a thing that everybody's puzzled about, is revolving around Denzel Mims, because he's a guy 6'3", 215 pounds, second round pick last year, showed some real flashes last year, had some real nice plays, and for whatever reason, this year, he really has barely played. In the first game, he got on the field, and I think he had 2 snaps. One of them was a catch for 40 yards. Yesterday, he didn't play a ton, had 2 catches for 33 yards, including the longest play of the day. So people are wondering, why isn't he playing more, especially when you know that Zach Wilson's strength is the vertical passing game, and Denzel Mims is a great vertical threat. And what it comes down to is it appears there's something going on there with the coaching staff. You've heard Robert Saleh talk a bunch of times about Denzel Mims not mastering the playbook or whatever it is, which to me is just a cop-out because, listen, I can't imagine that every single wide receiver on the team has a PhD-level understanding of the playbook, especially since this is a new offense for all of them. And when you have a guy like Denzel Mims, who's as big and talented and quick as he is, with a quarterback who needs weapons, a rookie quarterback, you find ways to utilize him. Even if he is having trouble with mastering the playbook, you pare it down for him. You give him five plays to run, a couple of routes, whatever. You simplify it, and you just tell him go out there and make some plays. So that's another thing that a lot of people are looking at with this team going into the second part of the season after the bye, is are they going to find a way to incorporate Denzel Mims, because they've barely used him so far, and it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And you know, Ed, when your team is scoring points and kicking butt like last week, people aren't going to make a fuss about Denzel Mims, because when Keelan Cole, Jamison Crowder, and Corey Davis are all making plays and Zach Wilson's throwing for 300 yards and the team's winning, great, all right, no problem. But in most of the games this year and most of the quarters, you haven't seen a ton of offense, and it's something where you could clearly point to Denzel Mims being a useful weapon in that offense, and him not being out there doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So when you look at what they're going to do in the second part of the season here, one of the key issues is Denzel Mims, and I'm curious to see what they do. They've been sort of stubborn about him so far. In fact, Mekhi Becton, who is hurt and was watching from home, tweeted out during the game, "Unleash Mims," which Bart Scott on SNY said afterwards was something that he believed represented the point of view of a lot of the locker room. So if a lot of the locker room is sitting there saying, why isn't this kid getting in the game, at some point you would hope the coaches would get on the same page.
Yeah, rightfully so. I mean, Denzel Mims, they've raved about him, and, you know, this rookie is a great talent, man. They've got to get him out there, I mean, sooner or later. Hopefully, after the bye week, I'm sure they'll pay attention to New Yorkers, the people in the New York, New Jersey area that love the Jets, will get him more involved in the offense and definitely recognize his talent. I want to move along now onto the defensive side of the ball. I'm looking at some of the stats here, and the leading tackler was Brandon Echols. He had seven tackles in this game. Just kind of give me your thoughts on how Brandon did in this game.
Yeah, Echols was okay. He's been okay mostly. I mean, look, he was a sixth-round rookie out of Kentucky, so there's a limit to what you could expect right off the bat. I think he's been reasonably solid for the most part. But I think the story of yesterday's game really was that the Jets just were not getting any pressure on Matt Ryan, and when you don't do that, it's going to be something where he picks you off all day. Look, Matt Ryan, again, it's not the same Matt Ryan from 5-10 years ago, but he can still play. And any decent quarterback worth his salt when given time is going to find ways to hurt you, and he did. And the coverage wasn't good, and they couldn't get off the field on third downs, particularly third and longs. So that's what you saw. Now, the week before against Tennessee, the Jets feasted. Quinnen Williams had two sacks. His brother Quincy had a sack, saw a sack from C.J. Mosley. So all these guys got in there, John Franklin Myers, Bryce Huff. And the Jets' pass rush, for the most part, this year has been a huge surprise, as has their secondary. We all thought the pass rush was going to be subpar because Carl Lawson got hurt in training camp, their big free agent acquisition at edge rusher, and yet going into this game they were fourth in the NFL in sacks, which is crazy. We all thought that the secondary, particularly the cornerbacks, was going to be one of the worst groups in the NFL because you had Bryce Hall coming back, who had only played about seven games last year and was a fifth-round rookie out of Virginia. And then you had a variety of different rookies with no experience whatsoever, Michael Carter II in the slot, Brandon Echols competing with a couple of other guys like Isaiah Dunn, who was an undrafted rookie. So you looked at these players and you said, okay, this secondary needs experience. The most seasoned guy there is Bryce Hall, who's played seven games. They're going to be terrible. And for the most part, in the first few games, they've been much, much better than you could have expected. And so all credit to Jeff Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator, and Robert Saleh, the head coach. But I think what you saw yesterday was everything that everybody was afraid of when Carl Lawson got hurt and when the Jets didn't add an experienced cornerback. The coverage broke down. The pass rush didn't get to the quarterback. Plays were made. And for all the praise that we've given Ulbrich and Saleh so far, again, there should never be a situation where Bryce Huff, who's a pass rusher, is dropping back into coverage to try and cover Patterson or Pitts. John Franklin Myers, as talented of an athlete as he is, that's an interior defensive lineman. He should never be in a position where he's dropping back to cover Kyle Pitts in the end zone. It's just never going to work out for you. So that was strange strategic planning there by Ulbrich and Saleh. And I have to say that this is the first game where I legitimately thought that the defensive coordinator and the head coach got smoked on the defensive side of the ball by the opposing team, particularly Arthur Smith, which is interesting because that was the guy that a lot of people thought was the runner-up for the Jets job or their second choice after Saleh. It's not like Smith was doing anything super complicated, but what he did worked, and Ulbrich and Saleh just couldn't figure out a way to stop it. So That's really what you saw from the defense. I think Echols leading the team in tackles was a byproduct of the fact that the Falcons kept moving the ball down the field. And so a lot of times when you see gains happening with running backs and tight ends and stuff like that, you'll see linebackers and defensive backs be the leading tacklers, because once they get into the defensive backfield, that's who steps up and makes the tackles. When the leading tacklers are guys in the interior, that's usually telling you that the team has done a reasonably good job of containing. So I think that's what Brandon Echols being the leading tackler tells you most of all. It tells you that story, which is that the Falcons kept picking up yardage, and Brandon Echols, the defensive back, had to jump in and limit it when, you know, they get 5, 10, 15 yards.
Yeah, that you mentioned a great point right there with Brandon playing in the secondary, being the leading tackler. It's a world of difference, as opposed, like you said, when your defensive lineman can get the majority of the tackles, take up the work in terms of getting a tackle. It's a whole reversal of fortune when it comes to the defensive side. I want to just stay with a couple of more people on the defensive side. I want to say Bryce Hall had 6 tackles in that game. Quincy Williams had 5 tackles. Jamie and Sherwood and Ashton Davis both had 4 tackles. Shaq Lawson had 3 tackles, and C.J. Mosley had 2 tackles. So, again, a different change of pace from last week's victory against the Tennessee Titans. Just kind of give me your thoughts on how those guys played and what they need to do to get better.
Yeah, I mean, the defense overall just – they had a tough time against the Falcons, really. Like I said, they could not get off the field. And Cordarrelle Patterson and Kyle Pitts just sliced them up. And it's funny because I had gone through earlier in the week the different tight ends the Jets had played against over the first 4 games. And the best production was from Hunter Henry on New England, who had caught 2 passes for 42 yards. That was the most yards gained by a tight end against the Jets. Noah Fant, 2 catches for 15 yards. Anthony Firkser, 3 catches, 23 yards. I believe Johnny Smith had 4 catches for 28 yards. So these guys just weren't really doing that much, and the Jets had done a good job against tight ends. And then again, we said that Kyle Pitts was going to be a huge focal point for the Falcons, and the Jets knew it. So you put all those things together and you say, okay, well, the tight end probably won't be that productive, but he was – the most productive he's been as a pro by far, having a huge day, 119 yards and a touchdown. Cordarrelle Patterson, same thing. For some reason, this late in his career, I think about a decade into his career, Patterson is having the best season of his career as an offensive player. And so, again, with Ridley and Gage out, you figure, got to hone in on Patterson and Pitts. Well, Patterson was able to get about 115 yards of total offense. So, really, when you look at it, the Jets' defense failed in all of its missions. Get pressure on Matt Ryan? Nope, couldn't do it. Stop the team on third downs and get off the field? Nope, couldn't do it. Find a way to limit Kyle Pitts and Cordarrelle Patterson? Nope, couldn't do that either. So really, there were individual players who did okay, but ultimately, when you look at the defense as a whole, they just weren't able to do what they needed to do. And I think by far, this was their worst performance of the season. I mean, one thing that had been not talked about enough was that this team has had trouble getting off the field on third and longs. We've seen it a couple of times. New England, for example, Tennessee last week almost cost them the game. It in part led to that game-tying touchdown for Tennessee that sent it to overtime. And then in the overtime period, there was a third and long that the Jets failed to stop. So they've had that issue. But it really comes to the forefront when they're not doing the other things right. Because last week, if you aren't stopping them on third and longs occasionally, it doesn't stand out as much when you're knocking Ryan Tannehill around all game and when you're limiting big play gains from happening. But when you're not able to get off the field on third and longs and you've got 2 players on the offense that are gaining over 100 yards of offense and Matt Ryan's sitting back there having a cup of coffee, then it all stands out and it just comes together as a bad performance. So the first 4 weeks, I thought for the most part the defense overachieved. This week they came crashing back down to earth, and I thought by far worst performance, not only by the players, but by the coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball too.
All right, and let's move along now to the quarterbacks. You know, Zach Wilson and rookie quarterbacks, Scott, this year have gone through growing pains. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and you can also add Zach Wilson to that list as well. Zach has only won one game so far in his very young NFL career. In week one against the Panthers, he passed, he had 258 passing yards to go along with two touchdowns and an interception. In the game against New England, he had 210 yards, but he threw four picks in this one. Week three against Denver, 160 yards, two interceptions. Of course, the week four victory over Tennessee, two touchdown passes and an interception. He passed for nearly 300 yards. Now, in this game that just passed in week five against Atlanta, only 192 yards and an interception. Give me your thoughts on more in the detail how you felt Zach did in his game against the Falcons.
Well, late in the game, you saw some nice throws. I mentioned a couple of Denzel Mims, for example. But ultimately, I thought top to bottom, this was a really poor effort. This is probably his second worst game after the Patriots game where he threw four interceptions. And really, it was frustrating because last week everybody was so jacked up. I was at the stadium. I haven't seen the stadium so amped probably since the Sam Darnold game when he came back from mono against the Dallas Cowboys and lit the Cowboys up. The Jets won, and everybody thought Darnold was a star in the making. And that thing was a week or two later, the Seeing Ghost game happened, and it came crashing back down to earth, and he never really recovered. And obviously now he's with Carolina. And with Zach Wilson, I think we all saw it as a potential star-making performance. Now, he was absolutely dazzling last week. Some of those throws were incredible. And I think the tweet that I put out after the Jets won was, this was the Zach Wilson that the Jets drafted at number two overall. Because you look at his tape and you see these plays, and there's maybe five quarterbacks in the NFL that could make some of the throws that he was making. But then this week, when he's not making those big throws and he's having trouble with the simpler throws, like I said, throwing the ball off a offensive lineman's back on a screen pass, missing Jamison Crowder completely on what could have been an easy touchdown, you've got to sort that out. And those weren't things that were on his BYU tape. So people have said it resembles early Josh Allen, and it does, but the difference is Josh Allen, when you watch his tape at Wyoming, you saw all that. He would throw a screen pass 5 yards over a guy's head, and that was a reasonably common occurrence. And the thing with Josh Allen was he's a ball of clay. You get him in here, and you're basically molding him from scratch. But what you know is he's got crazy arm talent. He's an incredible athlete, big dude, can run. If we can just find a way to teach him the more complex stuff and mold him, we could make him into an elite quarterback. Now, a lot of people, myself included, thought that was a terrible bet because when you pick a quarterback that high, the investment is insane. Not only are you using a premium draft pick like that, but you're now committing several years to trying to turn this kid into something that odds tell you he probably won't become. In Allen's case, it worked out. But I think that with Wilson, when you watched his tape, you never got that vibe that he was far away like that. Like any rookie quarterback, he was going to take some work, but he didn't have those fundamental issues on his BYU tape, and now it's starting to pop up, and you have to wonder what's going on, what's causing that. And I think that's something that has to be at the top of the list of issues that need to be fixed during the bye. A lot of people have suggested that the death of Greg Knapp, who was the quarterback coach, which is tragic, it was absolutely awful, not long before the season, was a huge hit to Zach Wilson and his development because Wilson had been working well with him, and now you don't really have a quarterback coach. I know they hired Matt Cavanaugh, but I don't know how that's been working out. And so a lot of the thought is that Mike LaFleur and Robert Saleh really have to bring an actual quarterback coach in here to work with Zach Wilson and fix that stuff because, look, we know that he can make these dazzling plays, but he's got to be able to consistently make those easier throws. And he's got to also, in addition to being able to make those easier throws, understand that it's okay to take those throws from time to time. So I think that that's where they're at with Zach Wilson. That's the surprising part. I didn't expect to see him struggle this much with the simpler throws, and I think that that's a major focus that the coaching staff should have over the bye week and the rest of the season is cleaning that up, because a lot of people were saying last week, if he can start making the easy throws regularly and accurately on a regular basis, then he could be really scary because of the fact that he can make those throws that so few quarterbacks can make. But they've got to do that, and they've got to drill into his head the idea that it's okay to take the five-yard check down if it's not there downfield. Look, if it's there downfield or you think it's there, fine. But if you look and you don't see anything, don't force it. Go for the five-yard check down or whatever. So I think that's a lot of what you're seeing with Wilson. And all these rookie quarterbacks have struggled to a degree. Funny thing is, the one that a lot of people crapped on the hardest before the draft process, Mac Jones, has probably been the consistently best one. He hasn't been incredible, but he's gone out there and done what's been needed to be done to either win or put the Patriots in a position to win. Last week, they damn near beat the Tampa Bay Bucks. They were a missed field goal away from doing it. And he's been consistently solid, hasn't been asked to do a lot. Josh McDaniels has done a really good job of simplifying things and making it easy on him, but he's done well. And Wilson, Lawrence, obviously, has thrown a ton of interceptions as well. Trey Lance just got in there, and he had a mixed bag of a performance for the 49ers in his first start. Justin Fields played better in his game yesterday, but obviously his first start was a mess, and he's a work in progress. But I think that's really where you're at with Wilson. He's a rookie quarterback. He's five games in, but he's got to clean up that simple stuff, and that's something that the coaching staff really needs to put a priority on.
Yeah, you mentioned Mac Jones has played pretty well in this early part of the year, and I think you mentioned Josh McDaniels. And again, I think a lot of credit for the way Mac Jones has played well, it is due to the coaching, with Josh McDaniels being the offensive coordinator, and of course with Bill Belichick being the head coach, and you know, doing things the Patriot way. And the Patriot way has turned out to be successful so far for Mac. I want to stay with Zach just for a moment. During the preseason, Justin Fields said after he completed the first preseason game, a reporter asked him, they said, how is the speed of the NFL? And he said, it's not that fast. Well, he got a rude awakening in that second preseason game. I want to ask you, Scott, do you think Zach has adjusted to the speed of the NFL, or do you think his he's still used to the speed that he was at while at BYU?
I think that's part of it, too. I think that, look, any guy that's coming into the NFL as a quarterback who's coming in from college, there's going to be an adjustment period where the speed is something that you're going to have to get used to. And I think that Joe Burrow, and even more so, obviously, Justin Herbert, sort of slanted people's expectations, because Burrow came out and played really, really well out of the gate with Cincinnati last year, before he got hurt. And Herbert, I mean, my goodness. I know that he didn't come in until the second game, but holy cow, he was unbelievable right off the bat. I think it was arguably the greatest rookie season a quarterback's ever had, and if it wasn't, then it was second only to Dan Marino. But he was absolutely fantastic last year, and I think people looked at that and said, oh, wow, look at that. In fact, a lot of people were saying that Zach Wilson was going to pass for 4,000 yards or throw 30 touchdowns or whatever this year. And I think there's just unrealistic expectations when you're talking about a rookie. There's going to be ups and downs and seesaws and all that. And it's going to be a learning process and a learning curve. And like you said, the game needs to slow down for him. I think, you know, he's somebody that had a reputation. And when you talk to people that coached him and knew him, and you see him in interviews and things like that, and obviously this is something the Jets really liked. From a mental standpoint, very quick processor, and generally somebody who is obsessed with the game of football, so he's always going to be trying to find ways to be better. But even with that being the case, there's going to be that adjustment period, and we're seeing it right now. Look, we're seeing it with Trevor Lawrence. How many times have we heard Trevor Lawrence, generational prospect, right? Can't miss. Best prospect since Andrew Luck, maybe the best prospect since Peyton Manning. And look at all the struggles he's gone through. Now, to be fair, he had his best game of the season against Cincinnati on Thursday Night Football. But still, he's had a handful of games where there have been times where he's just struggled in a big way. And, you know, you saw with Fields, like you said, rude awakening at one point for him. And with Wilson, there's some of that. I mean, look, Wilson played great in the preseason, but this is the danger of getting too carried away with preseason and training camp. We talked about this with Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore was absolutely dominating Jets training camp, and so all you heard was this kid's special, this kid's special. Well, guess what? Five games into the season, he's done next to nothing. That's not to say that Elijah Moore isn't still going to be a really good receiver. I think he certainly can be, but it just shows you that performing in training camp and performing in the game are two very, very different things. Performing in the preseason and performing in regular season games, also two very different things. And I think that's what we're seeing with Zach Wilson right now. I think you're seeing, as you said, they're trying to get the game to slow down for him, but also for whatever reason, he's having issues with those fundamentals, the type of issues that you never saw at BYU. So I'm curious to see how they try and clean that up, but it's obviously got to be at the top of the list because Zach Wilson, if we're being real about it, and anybody can say what they want to, but we all know this to be the case, is the most important player on the team. The quarterback always is. So if the quarterback is struggling, the team is going to have a lot of trouble being able to get wins and being able to go down the right path. And so if you get Zach Wilson on the right path, what you get, if nothing else, is competitive football. If Zach Wilson is able to be anything close to what he was against the Titans last week on a fairly regular basis, the Jets become a fun, entertaining, competitive offensive football team. So that's where they're at now with Wilson. He struggled with certain areas. He's a rookie. He's five games in. But they've got to clean some things up. And, look, the mission at this point with him has got to be that by the end of the year, you're looking forward and saying, Zach Wilson's the guy. There's no debate. You're not sitting there thinking they might draft another quarterback in two or three years. And, look, it's really not been a situation with the Jets where you've had that. I mean, Mark Sanchez, I know the Jets were able to go to the AFC Championship his rookie year, but if we're being real, he wasn't all that good. I know he had some nice playoff games, but there were some absolutely brutal games in there. He had 12 touchdowns and 20 interceptions his rookie season. And so you had questions about him going in year number two. Geno Smith had some dazzling plays his rookie year, but for the most part, very erratic. I think he also had something like 12 touchdowns, 20 interceptions, and there were definitely questions about him going in year number two. Sam Darnold flashed some great, especially the last couple of the season, but overall he had a bit of a roller coaster ride of a rookie season. So you were more confident with Darnold than you were with Geno or Sanchez, I think, in terms of him being the answer quarterback, but there were still some questions and you weren't completely sold. I'm not saying it has to be like Herbert or Burrow or anything like that where there was zero question in anybody's mind after their rookie years, even with Burrow getting hurt about halfway through the season, whether or not those guys were, quote-unquote, the guy. You knew they were the guy. With Wilson, you hope that that's where this trends. If he can finish the season playing well enough where everybody's confident going into 2022 that he's the guy, then I think that the coaching staff will have done its job and Wilson will have done his job in his part in developing as a quarterback at the NFL level. But there's a lot that goes into that. They've got 12 more games now to try and figure it out, and let's see what they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, you mentioned it, Scott, that the NFL is a quarterback's league, and if the quarterback plays well, everything pretty much falls in line. And, you know, speaking of falling in line, we've seen the New York Jets have had their share of quarterbacks in recent memory, as you mentioned, with Geno Smith, Sam Darnold, Mark Sanchez. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But I know New York Jets fans, they're really just in the New York metropolitan area, have been very critical of their teams, and the Jets are no exception to the rule. How have Jets fans in the area responded to Zach Wilson in this short amount of time in his NFL career?
Well, you know, Jets fans are they're a fickle bunch. The first home game of the year against the Patriots when he was really bad, they booed him, which I've always – my line is that it sort of reminds me – I don't know if you're a Chris Rock fan, Ed, but there's a bit that he did about O.J. Simpson, and he was talking about O.J. and how his wife had cheated on him and taken his car and all this other stuff, and how O.J. obviously had to be pissed to see her with another man. So I think his line was, I'm not saying he should have killed her, but I understand. In other words, he obviously shouldn't have killed her, but he understood why OJ was angry about what was going on. Well, that's kind of how I felt about Zach Wilson booing in the home opener against the Patriots. I'm not saying I'd have booed him, but I understand. Jets fans were frustrated. They hadn't been to the stadium since 2019 because of the COVID restrictions. They've been sold on Zach Wilson being the guy. He had looked pretty good in the second half against Carolina. You're playing the Patriots, going up against one of the other rookie quarterbacks, Mac Jones, packed house. People have been in the parking lot drinking since 7 a.m. And then they get in the stadium, they're jacked up, they're screaming, they're yelling, they've been waiting for this moment for well over a year, and boom, this is what you get. You get four interceptions in your first 10 pass attempts, the Patriots blow out the Jets, and it's like the air being let out of the balloon. So the fans were booing to express their frustration. Again, would I have booed them? No, but I understand why Jets fans did. And so you go back and forth with it. Last week, everybody, for the most part, that I talked to and that I heard from was, oh, my God, this kid's amazing. And I believe Andy Vasquez, who covers the Jets from NorthJersey.com, who comes on the show with me, one great line, he said, you saw more great plays from Wilson in one game than you would typically get from Darnold in an entire season. And I think that's true. If you looked at the game in against Tennessee last week at MetLife Stadium, you could make the case that Zach Wilson had more dazzling plays in that one game than Darnold did in all of 2020. As we know, Darnold was absolutely terrible. He was arguably the worst quarterback in the NFL last year. So people were really amped up. And then this week now the talk becomes, well, he's from a small school and he never played anybody and he always had too much time to throw and blah, 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 blah. The Jets messed up. They should have picked somebody else. So this is what's going to happen. When Wilson plays well, you're going to hear the pro-Wilson camp being pretty loud. When he doesn't play well, it's going to be the reverse. And Jets fans are very, like I said, very fickle. It's that sports talk radio dynamic, Ed. You know what I'm talking about. The WFAN caller, the guy who is a prisoner of the moment. So if Zach Wilson plays well, oh, Zach Wilson, top five quarterback, the Jets are blah, blah, blah. If he doesn't play well, the Jets are the dumbest organization ever. How did they pick him? They should have picked Mac Jones, or they should have picked Justin Fields or Trey Lance or whatever, and the Jets never do anything right, and Zach Wilson stinks, and that's just how it's going to go. So the easiest way to quiet the critics and to get everybody on the same page in a positive way is for the Jets to just play better. Like I said, last week you didn't hear much. People weren't complaining about Denzel Mims not playing because the Jets' offense was productive, and you had Keelan Cole and Corey Davis combining for over 200 yards of passing offense. And then you had Zach Wilson throwing for almost 300 yards, and he was throwing darts down the field. So you didn't hear complaints about Zach Wilson, and you didn't hear complaints about where's Denzel Mims. This week, you heard complaints about Zach Wilson, and you heard complaints about why aren't they using Denzel Mims more, because they weren't producing. So it's really what it comes down to. Jets fans, they want to see a team that's productive. They want to see a winner. But I think more than anything, they just want, like I told you before, to be confident coming out of the season that Zach Wilson is the guy. They don't want there to be any questions. They want week 17 to finish, or week 18 now, I guess, because there's 17 games to finish, and be able to say the Jets found their quarterback. And so even if the Jets go 4-13 or 5-12, if they come out of this with an offense that looks competent and Zach Wilson looking like the guy that was sold as the number two overall pick and that all the experts believed was good. And I'm not saying I'm an expert, but I also was very high on Zach Wilson. If that looks like it's the case where everybody was right and Wilson comes out of this looking like a franchise quarterback, I think Jets fans will be happy and you won't hear a ton of criticism. But if that doesn't happen, you're going to continue to hear it and it's going to get louder and louder, especially if you have a situation continuing where a guy who has so much talent like Denzel Mims isn't really getting that much of a look in these games. So that's really where I think Jets fans are at. They're very up and down, and they're going to respond to what's going on at that particular moment. So the easiest way to quiet the loud negative voices is to put a product on the field that people enjoy and that's competitive and that shows you that the Jets are headed in the right direction. So that's another thing that they're really going to have to focus on during the bye week. A lot of work ahead for Robert Saleh, Jeff Ulbrich, Mike LaFleur, and the rest of the staff, but especially the offensive side of the ball because they've got to fix what's going on there.
I have a public service announcement for New York Jets fans. Stay classy and be patient. When you're dealing with a rookie quarterback, just stay patient and be classy. I understand you want to win. And like you said, Zach, is a lot of Jet fans, a lot of sports fans are really prisoners of the moment. So just be patient. And like you said, Coach Robert Saleh and Jeff Ulbrich and Mike LaFleur in the offense, they've got a lot of work during the bye week to get a game plan together. And let's talk about the game plan. The next opponent for the Jets after their bye week is going to be a Week 7 matchup against the New England Patriots, the AFC East division game. We talked about him earlier, Mac Jones, and Mac played well out of all the rookie quarterbacks so far this year. So, Scott, what must the Jets defense do to neutralize Mac Jones and the Patriot offense?
It's funny because Mac Jones has been the least flashy, and that was really what you knew about him coming out of Alabama, is that Zach Wilson, you turn on his tape and you would say, oh my God, look at that throw. Trevor Lawrence, you knew, generational prospect, right? Justin Fields and Trey Lance, dual threats who could make these dazzling throws and could make these plays with their feet. And here's Mac Jones, sort of that old school, behind the center, drop back quarterback, not a guy who's going to run much, but at the same time, very accurate, very smart decision maker, doesn't make a lot of mistakes, quick mental processing, the guy that you heard a lot about going into the draft, and I think it's a fair comparison, and Jets fans obviously understand this one, was Chad Pennington before the shoulder surgeries, because Pennington was very similar. He wasn't a guy with, like, athletic gifts off the charts like some of these other guys, but he was a very accurate passer, always made the smart decisions, always able to move the offense, and he wasn't going to dazzle you, but he was going to do really well, and the team was always going to be competitive and have a chance to win. And I think that's what you've seen with Jones early on, and again, credit to McDaniels for putting him in a position where he doesn't have to do too much, but he's been very good at doing what he's been asked to do with New England. New England has been an interesting team because if that kick goes the other way and they win that game against Tampa Bay, all of a sudden, instead of being 2-3, now they're 3-2, and we're talking about them as a potential playoff team, which they still could obviously be. We'll see. But they destroyed the Jets the first time they played, the home opener for the Jets at MetLife Stadium, not really because of anything that Mac Jones did. Mac Jones played his part perfectly fine, but it was because of the self-destruction of Zach Wilson. And the interesting dynamic in that game is that everybody else played pretty well. The offensive line held up. The running backs did pretty well. That was easily the best game the Jets have had on the ground. The defense played really well, but Zach Wilson was just so bad that it torpedoed the rest of the game. There, each of the rookie quarterbacks the Jets have had, or I shouldn't say rookie quarterbacks, but the young quarterbacks the Jets have had in recent times have had disastrous games like that. Geno Smith's second year, he threw 3 interceptions in his first 8 passes and got benched in the first quarter by Rex Ryan. Michael Vick came in. That was against the Bills. He had a similar situation with Mark Sanchez, his rookie year. I think it was his 6th start. I was at that game. It was at home. I didn't check the weather forecast that day. I was wearing a long sleeve shirt, no jacket. It was like 0 degrees, and I'm shocked that I didn't get hypothermia that day. Mark Sanchez threw 5 interceptions and basically single-handedly lost them a game that they should have won with ease. They lost in overtime because Sanchez just couldn't stop giving the ball away. Sam Darnold, we know about the scene ghost game. That was one of the worst quarterback games that you'll ever see in your life. It was just absolutely horrendous. I always tell this story. I was on the way to the stadium and I got caught on the entrance ramp. There was some really bad traffic, so I didn't get into the stadium until I think it was mid to late first quarter. By the time I was in my seat, you knew the game was pretty much over by that point because Darnold had already thrown it away. So that's what you saw with Zach Wilson against the New England Patriots. Four interceptions in his first 10 pass attempts, two in his first two throws. The second one, not his fault. Corey Davis let it go through his hands, but still, it was just an absolutely disastrous performance. So on paper, you look at this and you say, the Jets got stomped at home, and the Patriots didn't even do anything fancy that game. It's not like they were throwing crazy blitzes at Wilson. They weren't. It was the exact opposite. So you look at it and you say, this one's going to be in Foxborough, right? The Patriots seem to be kind of rolling now a little bit, because even though they lost that game to Tampa, they were very good in that game, almost won it. They end up coming back from behind to win a big one yesterday against the Texans, right? Mac Jones seems to be comfortable, and they're starting to settle in. The Patriots should destroy the Jets in this game. Everything would point to that. But you never know. I mean, as I always say, Bill Belichick has a really good record against rookie quarterbacks, but two of the rookie quarterbacks that the Patriots lost to during his stretch as head coach of the Patriots, which lasts 20 years, which Geno Smith in 2013 and Mark Sanchez in 2009. Now, Sanchez beat him in, or I should say Sanchez's team beat him, because it wasn't just Sanchez, clearly, in a very tight contest. I believe the final score was like 16-9 at home, and it was the second game of the season. This was before Sanchez really started to struggle. It was a different story with the Geno Smith game. That one was at MetLife Stadium, and it was later in the season. It was the rematch, the second matchup of the season, and that one ended on a weird call where there was a penalty on a missed field goal, and the Jets were able to get a kind of a fluky win against the Patriots. All I'm saying is the Jets are coming off a bye. They've got a lot of time to plan. You never know. If Zach Wilson goes out there and has a huge game and everything's firing on all cylinders offensively, maybe the Jets are more competitive than most people expect. But I do think that, especially coming off of this game, the Jets are most likely, I mean, we'll see what the Patriots end up doing in their matchup this coming Sunday. The Jets are most likely going to be fairly heavy underdogs. I wouldn't be shocked if they're double-digit underdogs in this game, especially based on what they just did and what they did the first time they played the Patriots. So on paper, this one has the makings of a pretty bad beatdown, but you never know. If Zach Wilson can be anything close to what he was in Tennessee, then it's a whole different ballgame. But the question is, can the coaching staff figure out a way to make that more of the norm and less of an outlier? And that's really what will determine, I think, what happens with New England. If the defense gets back to form and they're able to get off the field on some third downs and get to the quarterback, and if the offense can move the ball effectively the way that they did against Tennessee and really the way that they did in the second half against Carolina in week one, then it could be a situation where the Jets – are in the game and maybe even have a chance. But if they can't do those things, then there's a reason that the Patriots are going to be heavily favored, and I think it could get ugly early.
All right, and let's move along now to the other side of the ball now. So we talked about Zach Wilson and all the things that he needs to do to improve. So what must Zach Wilson and the Jet offense do to go up against to overcome this New England defense, which is not bad, you know, we considered with Dante Hightower, Matthew Judon, also Kyle Van Noy, and also they recently brought Jamie Collins back. So What do you think the Jets' offense needs to do in order to get points up against this New England defense?
Jamie Collins sacking quarterbacks again. It's crazy. Some of these guys, I don't know what it is about that New England system, but I guess they just know exactly how to use them. We've seen this a bunch of times. Guys leave the Patriots. And this doesn't happen all the time, but there are so many guys that leave the Patriots, they underperform, and then they come back to the Patriots, and it's like nothing ever happened. Trent Brown is another example. Goes to the Raiders, ends up, they get rid of him, and then he's back with the Patriots, and he's performing at a much higher level. Deion Branch, if you want to go back a bunch of years. Van Noy recently, and now Jamie Collins, who had a really nice game against the Texans. Man, ultimately, like I said, I think what the Jets need to do is find a way to get the running game going, which they did in the first matchup, ironically, against the Patriots. And they need to find a way for Zach Wilson to be consistently effective throwing the ball. Got to be able to make the easy throws, and he's got to be able to make some of those dazzling plays and keep the defense honest. If they can keep him from being under pressure a lot of the day, which they were able to do the first time, and Wilson's able to clean up some of that stuff, then they might have a chance to be competitive, like I was saying. But if not, this could be a problem. And, I mean, look, let's not sugarcoat this. If Zach Wilson is anything remotely close to what he was against the Patriots the first time, especially in Foxborough, the Jets are going to get blown out. It's as simple as that. So Wilson's got to clean up the simple stuff. He's got to continue to make some of those really nice throws. And the offensive line has got to do their job opening up holes for the running game and keeping Zach Wilson upright. That's really what has to happen.
All right, fair enough. And then you heard it from him. He is Scott Mason from the Play Like a Jet podcast, giving us the recap of the Jets game against the Falcons in London. Also, talking a little bit about the Jets offense and defense, of course, Zach Wilson and the Jets' upcoming game against the New England Patriots in Week 7 after the Jets' bye week. Well, again, Zach, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. Just tell everybody what you do as the host of the Play Like a Jet podcast.
Sure. Well, first of all, Ed, thank you for having me on. Always love talking to you. Appreciate you reaching out, and I'm happy to come back on anytime you like. Play Like a Jet is a 7-day-a-week Jets podcast, God help me. There's a fresh episode in your feed every single day, so you subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your choice is for listening to podcasts, and you will have a brand new one. I've had many people tell me that they listen while they drink their morning coffee or eat breakfast in the morning. I've had other people tell me they listen while they commute. A lot of people tell me they listen while they walk their dog. So whatever it is that you do when you're listening to podcasts, it's there for you. It's generally, I'd say, anywhere in the range of like 25 minutes to an hour. Usually most shows are closer to a half hour than anything else. We don't do super long shows that often, every now and again. But we do brand new shows every single day. On Mondays, it's typically the post-game report with Andy Vasquez of NorthJersey.com. We tape that one late Sunday night. It goes up right around midnight on Monday. Tuesdays, there's always Next Year, Brian Bassett and his – that's the only one that I'm not on, but they chop it up. Brian is what we call the podfather of Jets podcasting. He was the first Jets podcaster, so I'm really happy to have him along with us. Wednesdays, usually, we take a look at Zach Wilson. We call it the Zach Wilson Weekly Report Card. Going to be a rough one this week, but Tim Jenkins, quarterback coach out of Colorado, CEO of Jenkins Elite. He's got successful quarterback camps all over the country. Fantastic insight that he gives. He's got a great YouTube channel, too, called All Things QB. And so he comes on to break down Wilson's performance each week on Wednesday. Thursday, we do the midweek news with Chris Nimbley, who covers the Jets for JetsInsider.com. Friday, typically, we do a show called Know Your Foe, where we'll discuss the opposing team in depth with somebody who covers that team and has an expert-level knowledge. So we'll do that generally on Fridays. Saturdays, we talk keys to the game, do a little bit of film with Luke Grant, who's our film guy over at Play Like a Jet. He does the YouTube videos on our YouTube channel, which, by the way, if you're not a subscriber to our YouTube channel yet, you haven't watched our videos, check them out. Videos are awesome. And, you know, subscribe so it's much easier. Helps us out a lot, too. We've really grown that channel the last 3 months, so I really appreciate everybody subscribing. And then on Sunday, we do the pregame report. We have a lot of fun with that. We'll do the last-minute news and injury stuff. And then also, we do a lot of the betting props because I think that, A, it's what a lot of people are into for football games. But also, it's a good way to predict different performances and how you think the game's going to go. So we'll do over-under. We'll talk about player prop bets, who's going to score touchdowns, amount of yards, quarter points, all that stuff. And then Walter Cherepinski of WalterFootball.com comes on and gives us his picks from around the league. He's actually really, really good. He's come in, you know, in the top five in a lot of really huge gambling contests. So if you want to make some money, good way to do it, listen on Sunday mornings before the game. So 7 days a week, it's there. Play Like a Jet, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, all that. And then also we've got our store, teepublic.com, teepublic.com. You can buy shirts. The art is phenomenal. Luke Grant's girlfriend is an incredible artist. She's done the work there. We have the Zach Says Go Long shirt with him pointing downfield. It's an artwork of him pointing downfield like he did at Corey Davis last week. We've got the John Franklin Myers, Quinnen Williams, Bless You, Thank You shirt. More incredible artwork there, too, just to celebrate John Franklin Myers' contract extension. We've got the Play Like a Jet logo shirt. We've got the Zach the Ripper shirt. A lot of cool stuff there. You can get mugs and hoodies and all that, too. TeePublic.com, T-E-E, public.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, at PlayLikeAJet1. So, Ed, again, thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it. And like I said, anytime you want me to come back, just let me know. Appreciate your support. Appreciate the support of everybody that follows and listens to our content.
Oh, man, awesome, awesome. That was great. So, again, one more time, Zach, tell everybody where they can find you or Play Like a Jet on the social media platforms, any websites you would like to pump up one more time, and, again, the streaming platforms where they can listen to Play Like a Jet.
Yeah, it's playlikeajet.com, plus the YouTube channel, Play Like a Jet. You could subscribe to that, and then you get the notifications when there's a new video. We do a couple of new ones a week. Luke Grant does some great film breakdowns. They're short. They're easy to digest, and they have all 22 clips. So check that out, Play Like a Jet YouTube channel. We've got the store, like I said, the Zach Says Go Long shirt, the John Franklin Myers, Quinnen Williams, Bless You, Thank You shirt, Zach the Ripper, the Play Like a Jet logo shirt. That's at teepublic.com. That's T-E-E public.com. And then we've got the Play Like a Jet podcast, which is a 7-day-a-week show. You can get new episodes every single day. Again, if you subscribe on whatever your favorite podcast app is, you get notified when a new episode drops. Typically, it'll drop just after midnight Eastern Standard Time every single day. So whatever your schedule is, whether you work an overnight shift, you commute early in the morning, you want to listen at lunch, you want to listen while you're walking your dog, whatever it is, it's always there for you. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever it is, it's always there. And then you can follow me on Twitter, at PlayLikeAJet1.
You heard it from him. He is Scott Mason from the Play Like a Jet podcast. Again, you want to listen to the podcast, check it out on Google Play. Also, check it out on Google Podcasts, I should say. And also, check him out at Apple, iTunes, also Spotify, and Stitcher. And again, also check out the website as well as tpublic.com for all your merchandise related to the Jets.
Come explore the new Total Wine & More and discover the lowest prices and largest selection in the state. Explore over 8,000 wines. Our helpful guides will help you pick the perfect one. Over 2,500 beers, including 800 local favorites, perfect for game day or your crawfish boil. And over 3,000 spirits with the lowest prices in Louisiana. You can even order delivery or curbside pickup. So come explore your new Total Wine & More at 7074 Segan Lane in Baton Rouge. Come explore the new Total Wine & More and discover the lowest prices and largest selection in the state. Explore over 8,000 wines. Our helpful guides will help you pick the perfect one. Over 2,500 beers, including 800 local favorites, perfect for game day or your crawfish boil. And over 3,000 spirits with the lowest prices in Louisiana. You can even order delivery or curbside pickup. So come explore your new Total Wine & More at 7074 Segan Lane in Baton Rouge.
Deloitte is the world's largest professional services network, and there's a reason for that. Consistency. But how does a giant global company provide consistency? Easy. With ServiceNow Digital Workflows, they connect all 300,000 plus of their professionals on a single platform, the Now Platform. So whether someone works in Indonesia, Mexico, or any other of the 148 countries they operate in, ServiceNow helps Deloitte perform their work from a common and connected place. They can leverage the same powerful tools they need to adapt to changing markets and get the same proactive support they need to thrive. And with ServiceNow workflows for IT, Deloitte can easily consolidate and scale their technology so professionals can access it wherever they are. So, how does Deloitte keep a consistently high standard for global clients? With ServiceNow workflows that keep a consistently high standard for global professionals. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. Learn more at ServiceNow.com.
Come explore the new Total Wine & More and discover the lowest prices and largest selection in the state. Explore over 8,000 wines. Our helpful guides will help you pick the perfect one. Over 2,500 beers, including 800 local favorites. perfect for game day or your crawfish boil. And over 3,000 spirits with the lowest prices in Louisiana. You can even order delivery or curbside pickup. So come explore your new Total Wine & More at 7074 Segan Lane in Baton Rouge.
And I'm sorry.
For the ones standing guard. For the eagle-eyed. For the knights in shining armor. And for all those who support them. We are Grainger, your experienced safety partner. Offering supplies and solutions for every industry. Committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Come explore the new Total Wine & More and discover the lowest prices and largest selection in the state. Explore over 8,000 wines. Our helpful guides will help you pick the perfect one. Over 2,500 beers, including 800 local favorites, perfect for game day or your crawfish boil. And over 3,000 spirits with the lowest prices in Louisiana. You can even order delivery or curbside pickup. So come explore your new Total Wine & More at 7074 Segan Lane in Baton Rouge.
Scott, thank you.
The Inspiration 4 orbital mission is full of firsts, and its diverse all-civilian crew shows how space exploration could become more accessible to more people in the future.
We are writing the narrative of human spaceflight right now. And what do we want that to look like?
That's Dr. Cyan Proctor, one of the crew members of Inspiration 4. Hear how their mission will also help fund treatments for childhood cancer in the series St. Jude Mission of a Lifetime. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Mmm, I'm loving McDonald's new $6 LSU Fan Faves meal.
Does it do that every time you open the wrapper?
No, sometimes it does this. But I like this best.
Touchdown!
Get 7 days of delicious with a new $6 LSU Fan Faves meal. Like Wednesday's spicy crispy chicken sandwich with medium fries and a medium Sprite for just $6. It's a different deal every day of the week. Prices and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
Thank you so much, my man.
Get Wendy's bacon or sausage egg and Swiss breakfast croissant for $1.99. This hot buttery croissant is fluffy enough to sleep on. Wakey, wakey. Get a better breakfast for just $1.99. Only at Wendy's.
Limited time only. U.S. price and participation may vary. Third-party delivery prices may vary. Not valid in the combo.
With Cox Internet and Home Life, you know when your pizza delivery is there.
Cox Home Life. Show from porch camera.
Pizza!
View your Cox Home Life cameras right from your TV with your Contour voice remote.
Advertised features require Cox Internet and Contour TV subscriptions. Services provided by Cox License Entities. See cox.com/licenses.
Whatever you want to come.
Get Wendy's bacon or sausage egg and Swiss breakfast croissant for $1.99. This hot buttery croissant is fluffy enough to sleep on. Wakey, wakey. Get a better breakfast for just $1.99. Only at Wendy's.
Limited time only. U.S. price and participation may vary. Third-party delivery prices may vary. Not valid in the combo.
Estuvo en un accidente de trabajo y no sabe qué hacer. Gordon McKernan, abogados de accidentes, le pueden ayudar. Muchas veces las empresas no quieren ayudar a los trabajadores lesionados porque no quieren reportar los accidentes con las aseguradoras. Nosotros podemos ayudarle a encontrar a un médico y que sus gastos médicos y beneficios semanales sean pagados durante el tiempo que no tenga la capacidad de trabajar. Llame a Gordon McKernan, abogados de accidentes, al 225-888-8888 para una consulta gratuita. Gordon McKernan, abogados de accidentes. Somos tu voz. Portavoz pagado.
Back on, just feel.
How does an organization boost innovation for employees and cut out complication? Simple. ServiceNow Creator Workflows give businesses the agility to create consumer-like app experiences in a matter of hours instead of months. With low-code development tools and pre-built templates, ServiceNow Creator Workflows make building user-friendly apps simple, so developers or anyone else can deliver cross-organizational digital workflows quickly. Whether it's a departmental app or a cross-enterprise process, ServiceNow Creator Workflows put the power of automation into the hands of everyday employees so they can focus on the bigger things. With Creator Workflows from ServiceNow, your previously manual and inefficient processes can become powerful digital workflows, connecting people, apps, and data. And they scale without sprawl. Simply put, it's innovation without complication. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. Learn more at servicenow.com.
Get Wendy's bacon or sausage, egg and Swiss breakfast croissant for $1.99. This hot buttery croissant is fluffy enough to sleep on. Wakey, wakey! Get a better breakfast for just $1.99. Only at Wendy's.
Limited time only. U.S. price and participation may vary. Third-party delivery prices may vary. Not valid in the combo.
Free to lettuce.
Wake up to Wendy's and get a bacon or sausage, egg and Swiss breakfast croissant for just $1.99. Made with fresh cracked eggs and served on a hot buttery croissant that's fluffy enough to sleep on. It's time to wakey-wakey. Hit the Wendy's drive-thru and get your bacon or sausage, egg and Swiss breakfast croissant for just $1.99. That's a better breakfast for just $1.99. Only at Wendy's. We got you.
Limited time only. U.S. price and participation may vary. Third-party delivery prices may vary. Not valid in the combo.
With more time at home, your culinary skills have improved, but don't stop there. The selection and expertise at Best Buy can help you get the latest tech to take your skills to the next level. Cooking chops unlocked. Details at BestBuy.com.
No.
How does an organization boost innovation for employees and cut out complication? Simple. ServiceNow Creator Workflows give businesses the agility to create consumer-like app experiences in a matter of hours instead of months. With low-code development tools and pre-built templates, ServiceNow Creator Workflows make building user-friendly apps simple, so developers, or anyone else, can deliver cross-organizational digital workflows quickly. Whether it's a departmental app or a cross-enterprise process, ServiceNow Creator Workflows put the power of automation into the hands of everyday employees so they can focus on the bigger things. With Creator Workflows from ServiceNow, your previously manual and inefficient processes can become powerful digital workflows, connecting people, apps, and data. And they scale without sprawl. Simply put, it's innovation without complication. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. Learn more at servicenow.com.
Come explore the new Total Wine & More and discover the lowest prices and largest selection in the state. Explore over 8,000 wines. Our helpful guides will help you pick the perfect one. Over 2,500 beers, including 800 local favorites, perfect for game day or your crawfish boil. And over 3,000 spirits with the lowest prices in Louisiana. You can even order delivery or curbside pickup. So come explore your new Total Wine & More at 7074 Segan Lane in Baton Rouge.
All right, we'll be back with more right after this.
They have got to start to come alive, and it starts on this drive.
Second and three, Wilson throwing this side of the field, and that is complete into the 40-yard line. It's Keelan Cole for a first down. That is a 23-yard pickup.
They haven't allowed them to run the ball, and these receivers just can't seem to get open.
First and 20 now, Wilson. Over the middle, he's got his man across midfield inside the 45 is Denzel Mims. In Atlanta territory now at the 43. Still with the ball. Wilson, going to go deep. This side of the field, it is. Incomplete, and the penalty marker is down.
Well, I'm really...
Pass interference, defense number 24. The ball's placed out of the foul. Automatic, first down.
He just doesn't play the ball and bails out the Jets and sets them up inside the five-yard line.
First and goal. Carter to the end zone for the touchdown. Zach Wilson throwing left, and he's got his man, Jamison Crowder, for the two-point conversion. And just like that, the Jets are within three.
Come explore the new Total Wine & More and discover the lowest prices and largest selection in the state. Explore over 8,000 wines. Our helpful guides will help you pick the perfect one. Over 2,500 beers, including 800 local favorites, perfect for game day or your crawfish boil. And over 3,000 spirits with the lowest prices in Louisiana. You can even order delivery or curbside pickup. So come explore your new Total Wine & More at 7074 Segan Lane in Baton Rouge. Come explore the new Total Wine & More and discover the lowest prices and largest selection in the state. Explore over 8,000 wines. Our helpful guides will help you pick the perfect one. Over 2,500 beers, including 800 local favorites, perfect for game day or your crawfish boil. And over 3,000 spirits with the lowest prices in Louisiana. You can even order delivery or curbside pickup. So come explore your new Total Wine & More at 7074 Segan Lane in Baton Rouge.
right, everybody, that's going to do it for another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. Once again, a big special thank you to Scott Mason, the host of the Play Like a Jet podcast. The podcast is dedicated to providing New York Jets content. Had fun talking to him about anything and everything happening currently with the New York Jets. And until next time, remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out. Peace.